The Mystery of the Outdoors Man.
January 2nd, the second day of a brand new year. Something over, and something just begun. That's the way I feel, anyway. I thought the biggest problem I'd have going back home to Big River for Christmas was that I was broke. No presents for anyone. But Mom, being Mom, had bought presents for everyone and put my name on them just in case. It was a great Christmas. Better now that I'd been away. To see everyone. Mom's side, the Walker side, and Dad's, the Devereaux's. Our fourth Christmas since my father died. Yeah. Christmas holidays, jingle bells, and I'm dreaming of a white Christmas and all that. It was great. Until my father reached out of his grave and tapped me on the shoulder.
Hey, Flash, over here.
Hey,
sit down. Meet Terry. Terry is Flash.
Hi.
Terry's visiting. She's a cousin of Marcy. She's from Kashaboo.
Hey, don't say it that way. Come on, it's bigger than Big River.
Everything's bigger than Big River. My thing's bigger than Big River.
God, you're terrible.
And Flash here, well, we've known each other since, since before we had flies in our pants.
One track mind.
Yeah.
Flash is a resident of Toronto now. He's a writer.
I'm a cab driver.
No, you're a writer who sometimes drives
I'm a cab driver who sometimes has delusions he could write if he ever got started.
Then how come they call you Flash?
Good point.
Stewie, the wayward son of the wealthiest family in town and my best friend, called me a couple of days after Christmas, said he could set me up with this beautiful blonde nurse visiting Big River from Thunder Bay. She turned out to be a brunette and a waitress from Kashaboo, but other than that, Stewie was telling the truth. She was cute. And that's why I was sitting in the bar at the Queen's Hotel when Norm Martin came in and he motioned me over to his table. Just as simple as that. And what I had been trying to forget for the last 4 years, it all came screaming back.
I don't think there's anything of value, you know.
Right.
Just some work shirts, old pair of safety boots, change of socks, I think. A windbreaker. It's just that, you know, when I cleaned out his locker at the mill, I didn't want to bother your mother at the time. I mean, it was tough, the way he died and all.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I packed everything up in a carton, took it home, waited for the right moment. I never did feel like the right moment. So, it sat in my back kitchen for over 3 years now. And my wife, she's been saying, for God's sake, either throw it out or do something about it. So, maybe if you want to come over and have a look through, you could decide.
Yeah, well, okay. I had a few more beers with Stewie and Terry and Stewie's girlfriend Marcy to kind of fortify myself, I guess. Then I walked over to Norm Martin's house. The streetlights were just coming on, and the snow was piled up high beside people's walks and along the roads, and the Christmas lights were still up, and the moon, pale as a ghost. September 23rd, 1988. My father and I were out at our cabin doing a little fishing and getting the place ready for moose season, like always, laying in wood, putting on the storm windows, working on our old snowmobile. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I woke up, and for some reason I knew, felt, right away, something was wrong. I got up, went out to the front room. The cabin door was open. I stood there, shivering. I said, "Dad? Dad?
Dad? It is. Right here. Yeah, I can reach it. There. You go ahead now, Walker. Look through. Take anything you want. The rest, well, I'll look after it. All right?
Sure.
Okay. You just take your time now.
Norm Martin went back into the main part of his house. I opened up the carton. There were 2 work shirts folded on top, just like he'd said. The sleeves were still rolled up, like Dad always wore them. They needed a wash, just like Dad's work shirts always needed a wash. Oil stains, frayed collars. I picked them up, pressed them against my face, faint but unmistakable, or maybe it was just my imagination. The smell of tobacco, of sweat. Almost the first smell I can remember as a little kid. Pick me up, Dad. Pick me up. Dad. I called out Dad, and then walked to the open door of the cabin, took one step outside, bang! And the night rocked. I ran down to the lake. The shotgun was still swaying from an old nail in a tree. He lay in the moonlight, blood splayed across the rocks. His head in the cold began to steam.
Oh, that you, Walker? Six.
Hey, Ma, how's it going?
I think my arms are gonna fall off. And
you have to say that if the light is setting.
I did.
Did you know different, Charlie, were getting you a rowing machine?
If I had, I would have stopped them.
You want to keep in shape.
Why? Oh, that is really enough. Oh. Now here, can you help me shove it under the bed?
Well, all your volunteer work and everything, you're on a zillion committees, aren't you? And Judy and Deb think you're trying to do too much. You don't want to get yourself run down.
Look who's talking. Well, what kind of exercise, what kind of meals do you eat in Toronto? Do you eat regularly? And how can you get a decent sleep when you're driving a cab all night? And how can I get a decent sleep when I think you're either going to get shot or starve to death?
Okay, sorry I asked. I was thinking of Dad today. I walked up to the mill.
Oh.
He liked working there, didn't he?
Well, he liked going up into the bush in the winter to cut timber. Look forward to that. Didn't like the inside work so much.
Oh, yeah, he liked the woods. Mm-hmm. Not much of a businessman, was he?
He certainly wasn't.
You did the banking and...
Yeah, the banking, everything. I took care of all the finances. He took care of the fishing and hunting and playing poker with the boys. Oh, he was a wonderful man. Kind, decent man. But he certainly wasn't a businessman. Why, Walker? Why do you ask?
Oh, I was just thinking about him. I think about him.
I know.
Norm Martin was mostly right about what was in the box, except it wasn't a windbreaker, it was an old leather vest. He liked to use it in the canoe because it kept his arms free and it had pockets for his cigarettes and his flask. Rocket fuel, he called it. The flask wasn't there. Just a half package of dried up rum, cigarette tobacco, some cigarette papers, and in the inside pocket, a bank book.
Hey, Sabar! Salut!
Hey! Look who's here. My boy.
How you doing?
I'm up to guy. Walker. Walker, Walker.
You're crushing me.
No.
Yeah.
Hey, you got some bubble gum?
You always say that.
I ain't gonna fix that damn truck. Bubble gum, binder twine,
three Hail Marys. You always say that, too.
Hey, it's true. Every time. What do you think, I'm making it up? Come on to the office. Come on. There's a relative of yours in here you should meet.
Oh?
Walker? Meet Johnny. Johnny? Meet Walker.
That's pretty good, Mr. Savard.
Just made it up, huh? Here's to you, me, and the devil. He never catches.
Yeah. I went over to Norm Martin's today. He had some old stuff Dad's from the mill. Some stuff that was left in his locker.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. There was this passbook. You know, a bank book? He deposited $4,000 in it. In March, the year he died. The last withdrawal was in September. Just 2 weeks before.
Yeah. A long time ago now, eh?
I wonder what he was up to. You know, Dad. He never had any money. It was a joke in our family. Every second Friday, he'd make a big deal of giving Mom his paycheck. Sometimes he'd carry it on a velvet pillow or stick it in his hat. She did all the banking. Mom doesn't know anything about this. I'm sure of it. Mr. Savard, you were his best friend.
Well, everybody was Gerard Devereaux's best friend. Everybody loved Gerard. It was always fun, you know. Well, sometimes he'd get a little carried away, but always good in his heart. My advice, don't worry about your dad. Come on, have another drink.
How did he get $4,000? Did he sell something? What? The whole family would have known. And why did he need it?
I don't know, son.
The bank's not even in Big River. It's in Marathon. He had to drive 50 miles down the road.
Walker.
I think if I could just find out why he did it. Any reason. I don't care. I could get over it, you know?
How's the car running?
Okay. Judy and Fred, they've been trying to talk her into getting a new one, but you know my mother, stubborn.
Yeah. Sounds all right.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the drinks, Mr. Savard.
Walker, wait a minute.
What?
Walker, you know, your dad, well, quite a long time ago now, he helped me get started. Found this old bulldozer in a broken down old dump truck. I wanted to go out on my own, but I didn't have enough money. Gerard, well, he talked your mom into going along with co-signing a note, using their house as collateral. Lend me $10,000. Told him he was in for 20%, but he just joked. Told me to forget it. Well, I managed to pay it back all right. You know, your dad would even drive for me now and then when I was pushed, but wouldn't take any money for that either. So, well, anyway, late that last winter, he showed up one night and asked me what his 20% was worth. I said, well, guess the business would be worth about 200,000. So say 40,000. He said, let's call it 4,000. If you can give me a check right now. That wasn't like your dad. It was like he was struggling with something inside and he hated himself for asking. I wrote a check. Didn't see much of him after that. In fact, didn't see him at all.
Hello?
Hey, Krista?
Walker? Hi, it's... What, it's 2 o'clock?
Is it? Oh. Sorry. I just wanted to wish you, like, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Have you been drinking?
No, on and off. Off and on.
Sounds more like on to me. So, how's your holiday going? How's your family?
Oh, well, everything's great. Except, I found out something about, you know, my father. I mean, I haven't found out anything yet. He had this secret bank account. $4,000. It's like screwing me up, you know?
Why?
Why? That's it. Why did he have to do that to my mother? Why did he do it to my sisters? Why? Did I have to find him? Maybe I could find something out. Maybe I don't want to. It's like every way I turn, it hurts.
Maybe that's the problem.
What?
You've just been turning and turning, trying not to hurt. Maybe you have to, I don't know, pick a direction and go through it.
Yeah.
And if it kills you, you can always blame me.
Yeah? Well, I will.
Gambling?
No.
Sure. He cops 4,000 bucks because he's got the bug. And then he gambles it all away in $100, $200 bites.
I don't think that's a big enough motive, Stewie. We're looking for something big.
Big. Okay. Here's big. You know what hit me right off when you showed me the passbook? I didn't want to say it. Drugs.
Drugs?
Yeah. Your dad, he liked to drink.
Yeah.
He liked to gamble, didn't he?
In moderation.
So someone turned him on to some junk.
Oh, come on, Stewie.
No, listen. He goes to $4,000 worth of this stuff. And then he bums out. He gets psychotic. He kills himself. As soon as I saw those figures, man, I knew. It's like a pattern. You remember me? It's like me and Hash Oil. Remember that?
I remember playing in Geraldton one night, and you asked me what the score was, and I said 4-2 for them, and you said,
"No shit."
Then you said, "What are we playing? Hockey?"
Oh, man. That was the worst time of my life, man. That was the worst.
I don't know, Stewie. My father, he was 43 years old. I mean, he was, like, old. And he was an outdoorsman.
He was a neat guy.
Yeah.
But still could have been drugs.
Yeah.
Stewie waited outside in his shiny new GM pickup, the kind raised so high he could drive over 3-foot stumps, while I went into the bank in Marathon. The teller, a middle-aged lady in pink tinted glasses, stared at me like I was a crook and told me I'd have to have a paper signed by the beneficiary of the estate to close the account. The balance, according to the passbook, was only $34.52. I couldn't do it anyway. The beneficiary was Mom.
Yes, I understand. But this account, though, it hasn't been used for over 3 years. I thought there was some kind of rule or something.
Of course there's a rule. There's always a rule. Well, you must have received at least one letter. Notices go out on dormant accounts after 2 years.
Maybe it was the wrong address.
Well, if it was, that's not our fault.
Could you check? Please, ma'am.
The mailing address is... Well, it's a post box number here in Marathon.
What's the residence?
Route 1, Heron Bay.
A phone number?
364-6283.
Okay. Thanks.
Just a minute. Is this correct? Should I correct this?
Yeah. That's the right address. Leave it that way.
Heron Bay was a little village right on Lake Superior, about 20 miles the other side of Marathon. One road in, same road out. There were about 65 numbers listed in the Marathon phone book for Heron Bay. It took us 5 minutes to find the listing for 6283. Some guy called Marcel LaViolette, 12 Lee Street. My father would have had to give some address to the bank, but why not just make one up? Why would he have thought of this one?
Yeah.
Mr. LaViolette?
Yeah?
Well, it's kind of cold. Can I come in for a sec?
You selling something, eh?
Oh, no.
No. Well, come on in. Sure. Come on.
He led me up 2 steps into a surprisingly large kitchen. A sudden rush of warmth, the smell of fresh baked bread.
You're not from around here?
No, Big River.
Ah, a tourist. Are you lost, Dan?
His face crinkled up into a well-used smile. A friendly, easygoing type. I liked the man right away, and I felt relieved.
I was just wondering, I'm just trying to find something out. My name is Walker Devereaux, and I was wondering if you knew my dad, Gerard De...
I saw it coming. I guess I was so surprised I didn't move, and his right fist smashed right into my face. I fell, tumbled backwards down the stairs. He was on me, picked me half up, drove me right through the door into the snow, landed one kick to my face. Luckily, he was only wearing socks on his feet. Before I could roll out of his way, I couldn't believe how fast and strong he was.
Go on, get out of here! No Devereaux! No Devereaux! I should have killed that son of a bitch myself, you hear? Get out! Get out!
For 1 second, I felt like flying into him, kneeling him up against the wall. Then I turned away, half staggered through the snow.
You want to find him? You find out at the graveyard! Find out in the graveyard! I caused that son of a bitch!
I had to haul Stewie back in the truck. He was all for hanging the guy up inside out on his own clothesline, but instead, we left. It wasn't that bad, a throbbing eye, a cut lip. It was my insides that were all jangled up. My father. Who could hate my father like that? Why? I got Stewie to let me off at the cemetery in Big River. I told him I just wanted to think about some things. He didn't ask me any questions. He's my best friend. At first, it just seemed that La Violette was being sarcastic or something. You want to find him? Find out in the graveyard. But the more I thought about it, the more I wasn't so sure. It was kind of a strange thing to say. Maybe he was trying to hurt me and tell me something all at the same time. The whole family, all 6 sisters, the married ones, husbands, their kids, we all came here late Christmas Day, just the same as we did that first Christmas. Mom likes to put poinsettia around his grave. It probably seems a little weird to the rest of the town, but that's what Mom wants. And it does make the gravesite seem, well, festive. Now, I walked there again, easy to find, the flaming red flowers in the snow, but my father's headstone just looked back blankly at me. And then I remembered something. Something I had seen out of the corner of my good eye as we wound up the road out of Heron Bay. A gray picket fence leaning against the snow. A small stone chapel. And a graveyard behind. The parish priest was new to the village, and I told him the same thing I told Mom when I borrowed her car. I'd fallen on some ice. At least he believed me. He also believed I was doing my family tree. It took a while to find La Violette in the register. Row 12, 6 and 7, over from the east side. I dug out the snow from the first gravestone. Jean-Michel La Violette, 1934, his wife, Marianne, 1956. I waded through a snowdrift and knelt down in front of the second stone. It was a smaller stone with a gold angel engraved on the black marble. And then in gold script, I am the resurrection and the life. And below that, a name. Pauline Marie Laviolette, born May 10th, 1969, died September 7th, 1988, 2 weeks before my father shot himself. She was 19.
How'd you find someone in a small village? You asked the man at the general store, right?
Right. Yeah, I just asked about Pauline. He said to see you.
Oh, your poor face. Oh, I'm not surprised. My brother would have done the same to your father the day we buried her, if we hadn't held him back. Not that your father would have defended himself. Your father, he just stood there like he was a ghost already. Do you want some tea? I could make some tea.
No, thanks.
Well, sit down then. Sit down.
Thanks.
Well, it was a mistake, of course. These things, they always are, aren't they? Marcel, he cooked for years up in the lumber camps during the winter. 1 year, he takes his daughter Pauline up to help, you know, and she meets this Gérard Devereaux.
But my father, he was 43.
So? He was still a man, no?
Yeah.
Pauline was a special girl. She was very gentle, very trusting, and beautiful, you see.
This is her?
Yes. So if she had been more demanding, or stronger, more realistic, even, then perhaps things wouldn't have gone as they did. But she trusted and waited for Gérard, asking nothing, so he gave everything, you know. She never asked him to stay, so he couldn't go. He loved her. Oh, yes. And he always seemed to have money. He'd buy her things, he'd take her out, and they'd come back very late. Marcel couldn't stand it, so he kicked her out, so she stayed with me. I saw a lot of your father. He was here all the time.
Did you know that he had, like, 7 children and a wife?
Of course. I don't know what he was going to do. Perhaps he was going to run away with her. Perhaps he would have found strength to break it off. But when Pauline was near, when she'd joke with him, when she'd touch him on his shoulder, such a smile on his face. Oh, yes. They were in love.
What happened to her?
Oh, my dear. She was driving alone on that damn highway. And this tourist, he was passing a bus and... Marcel, he raged and raged. He nearly lost his mind. And your father, like a ghost.
I see.
Yes. One thing I never knew. She told me, but... I don't know whether she'd had the courage to tell him. There was going to be a child.
Hey, Mom.
Oh.
Stewie's here. I'm off to the airport.
Oh. Oh, let me go. This stupid boy.
No, it's okay. You stay where you are.
Wait, are you going to be all right?
Absolutely.
You won't stay?
Nope. But I'll always come back.
Oh, come here. Oh.
I love you, Mom. I love you. Mm.
So, back to Toronto and no more wondering why. Now I have a secret to keep for the rest of my life instead. But I do keep wondering what was going through his mind that night and what was going through Pauline's when she was driving down that highway. Okay, some things I'll never know. Like Krista says, choose a direction and just leave. And when it hurts real good, you'll know you've gone. I guess I'll forgive him and hate him for the rest of my life. What he did to my mother, my sisters, to that girl, to me. To me. Oh, geez. It's going to take some getting used to. It's like he just reached out of his grave, straightened things out, and let me go.
We've just heard episode 8 of Midnight Cab, The Mystery of the Outdoors Man, written by James W. Nichol. Featured in the cast were David Ferry as Walker and Jacqueline Samuda as Krista. You heard Ted Dykstra as Stewie and Deborah Duchesne as Terry, with Dan McDonald as Norm Martin and Gilles Frappier as Walker's mom. Jean-Marc Amiot played Savard and Dennis O'Connor was La Violette, with Norma Edwards as the bank teller and special guest star Marie-Hélène Fontaine as Jeanette. Music for the series is composed by Milan Kimlicka, and the casting consultant is Linda Grierson. The recording engineer is Joanne Anka, with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. The production assistant this week is Nina Callahan. Midnight Cab is produced and directed in Toronto by Bill Howell.